The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Ray Allen, Ray Engineering and Producing on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday. It's October 24th, 2019. First off, thanks, tip of the hat, my friend Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita's son. Dan does such a good job for us, hosted the program on Monday. Dan Gibson, my other good friend Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson, also does a great job and hosted yesterday. Had a very interesting show about El Tour and all the influence of biking and how important bicycling is to Tucson. So it helped to Dan, the two Dans, allowed me to get away for a couple of days. Broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, you're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. All of the podcasts available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Live line number 790-2040. Ward 2 Democrat Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman, is on the live line. Councilman, how are you? Everything going well at school?
I'm actually at the Ray Davies luncheon today, so we're a little double booked, but no big deal. I was able to step out, make a call.
Yeah, that's been going. That's typically this time of year, isn't it? Ray Davies, for folks who don't remember, what an important figure he has been in education in this community. Why don't you quickly give our listeners a little background about who Mr. Davies is?
Well, Mr. Davies was a longtime educational advocate in Tucson, and he was instrumental in the organization of the Educational Enrichment Foundation. The Educational Enrichment Foundation basically is the model of what a private-public partnership is to augment the educational opportunities that any community would have. It's actually served as a model to other communities around the country, and they've named the luncheon and the award after Mr. Davies. They have it every year, and it is a very large event. It's one of the large events every that the EEF puts this on. And it's just unbelievable.
How is Mr. Davies?
Well, from what I see, I have not seen him yet today. So I actually stepped out of the lunch before I could get see him. So I don't know exactly. I'm sure he's doing very well, but when I go in and if I see him, I'll probably know more.
And please give him my regards, would you?
You got it.
All right. Let's talk about couple of days ago, Tucson City Council going ahead with a move that will make the city of Tucson the largest municipality in Arizona to raise the age to purchase tobacco products, including e-cigarettes that will be up to the age 21. The other cities that are on board with this are smaller, Cottonwood, Douglas, Flagstaff, and Goodyear. Is this a good move for the city of Tucson, Paul Cunningham?
I don't think it's a bad move. I think there was compromise that I put forth might have been a more responsive ordinance, but the ordinance fine. The bottom line is that we're reducing the opportunity to get cigarettes into the hands of underclassmen, high school students, and middle school students. And there are studies say that laws like this do lower that opportunity. I think it would have been better if it would have been countywide. The county kind of balked on doing it, even though they had a more sensible proposal in front of them. But the city was going to go ahead and do this. I think ultimately it'll be somewhat moot. I think the state's going in the direction of passing some version of this law that will preempt ours anyway, but it's nice to lead the way.
Yeah, the front page story in the Star today talked about state lawmakers now are looking at moving forward with this, whether or not there's going to be enough momentum this upcoming session. We'll see. The lone dissenting vote was council member Richard Vimbris from Ward 5. He was concerned that the proposal would harm small businesses. Does that argument have some merit, Paul Cunningham?
I think it does. I think there's definitely unintended consequence to any law that you make. And in this case, when you get down to the minutia, the look back period was we're allowed to have so many violations 3 years. Well, the way we set it up is that if you had 3 violations 1 year, you'd be looking at a 30-day suspension, which means for some of our convenience stores that work on a really close margin, they would have to probably close their doors, which means 9, 10, 11 people out of work, which means another vacant building in a neighborhood. parenthood then, and that's no good. So one of the amend posts was take that look-back period down to 24 months, giving opportunities for stores to retrain people and then redeem themselves, also making it a little bit more complaint-based. But Mr. Finber has also wanted a fee to for a tobacco license to go down from $300 to $200, which meant that the ordinance itself wouldn't be budget neutral and would be subsidized the enforcement of the ordinance out of the general fund. So nobody really wanted to go along with that. And in the end, I don't think anybody wanted to be the person sending on getting tobacco out of kids' hands. So we all, I'm a middle school teacher and a PE teacher. There's no way I'm not going to go along with something like this. I just definitely think if you get into the minutiae, there was a better version passed. Thing was that keeping in mind what the state's probably going to move ahead on a different version, keeping in mind that we really have to regulate the vape shops and the e-cigs a little bit better, I went along with the ordinance.
Do you think some of your middle schoolers are smoking?
Well, it happens all the time.
It does?
I mean, not at our school today, but I'd be remiss to believe that there isn't one middle school in town that hasn't had to discipline a child for bringing cigarettes or tobacco paraphernalia on campus here. It happened, whether or not they're experimenting, whether or not they think it's cool to have it and not use it, whether or not. But that stuff happens. It's that age. Middle schoolers trying things in the initial part has been going on for 50 years, Bill.
Yeah, I guess so. How about you? Have you been a tobacco user?
You know, I chewed tobacco when I was in the Army, and at my middle son's first birthday, I quit forever.
Oh, good for you. What do you think of your colleague, Councilman Kasachek, saying we need to take a look at lowering the speed limit around town here in some of these congested midtown intersections that homeowners are saying are just too darn dangerous? What do you think about that?
I think lowering high-density regulation 20 miles an hour or even 35 to 30 is totally within our purview. It's totally an opportunity to take a look at how we do traffic all the way around. And I think in some places it may make a lot of sense. I mean, it's really a matter of traffic flow and traffic count, car count, vehicle count, pedestrian count, bus load. There's all kinds of variable factors that go into deciding something like this. But look, we have a spike in pedestrian death. We have got to take a look at everything. And I think it's very responsive for Councilmember Kasachek to bring this out, and I appreciate it.
Is this something the city council can do? I'm not aware of how all of this works. Say you've got a 35 mile per hour speed limit. Can the city council say, well, it's going to be dropped down to 25? Do you have that power?
I think there are parameters set by the state, but not exact numbers. So I think it's 20 to 30 for residential and 30 to 50 for feeder or collector streets. And I don't have the statute in front of me, but I think it's parameters set by the state, not actual speed limit. So the short answer is yes, city council has the power to drop speed limit.
But we've got to do something. You agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Before I change topics, I am going to change topics before we take a break. The scooters, so far, luckily, we haven't had a major accident with them. The jury's still out as far as you're concerned, Paul Cunningham.
Yes, but I'll say that the initial was a lot more positive than I thought. I thought I was going to get calls and clutter on the street complaints. A couple of people have called and thought people had abandoned them. That was an interesting one.
Huh.
I thought it was going to be a lot worse than the initial reaction, but it seemed to have not been as the negativity of excitement or the excitement of negativity was much lower than I anticipated, and we're very blessed to not have an accident. Probably brought it up now, and there's going to be one tomorrow, so I won't even go there. But I think that the initial process somewhat promising. Maybe we could reduce the number a little bit, or maybe we could bump the price a little bit. We'll have to see. I can tell you this: I actually rode one downtown.
You did,
one night, and no kidding, my tire almost got caught in a streetcar track. So they're not. I almost dipped it. So if they're not perfect, but I am. I think that the initial deployment of them has been much less controversial than anticipated.
Well, luckily you weren't injured, because I could see the headline now if you were and where that would be placed. All right.
Yeah, that'd be all kinds of fun. Sure.
I want to talk about the TCC, but I'm going to do that after the break. So Paul Cunningham, stick around for a few minutes with us. It's the Buckmaster Show on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We're having some delightful weather over here in Tucson. You can imagine. about a few degrees cooler up in Silver City, and I bet the temperature is going to be, oh, there it is, 67 degrees around the noon hour. You can't beat that. Great time of year over in Silver City, just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find ideas on where to stay, all sorts of suggestions on things to do. One of my favorite places, the world-famous Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, north of Silver City. It's Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, southwestnewmexico.org. Buckmaster returns right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio on Buckmaster Monday through Friday during the noon hour, where we've been since 2011. We have Tucson City Councilman Ward 2 Democrat Paul Cunningham, who stepped out of the annual Ray Davies Education Awards luncheon, and I appreciate the councilman taking a few minutes to speak with us. On Friday, Fletcher McCusker and Mark Irvin signed documents on the Rio Nuevo, on behalf of the Rio Nuevo Board, signed the documents with the Sunt Corporation. This is a huge deal. It's the renovation of the Tucson Convention Center and surrounding campus. How big a deal is it, Paul Cunningham?
Well, when you really put it to it, this is the opportunity to idolize what is historically not Tucson's decision, and it's now up to us to write another chapter history about TCC. And you know, the TCC sometimes gets a bad rap because of what it did to Barrio, and it's probably well deserved. But there were some, you know, I had a different time in the late 70s, early 80s. TCC was pretty brand new, and so growing up in Midtown, I was jealous of the teenagers who'd go to cool concerts, talk about how great the TCC was. And I was in the heyday of the Ice Cat, and we were a primo tour destination because, counterintuitive to what you know, the Tucson Convention Center Arena, when it was first built for a large venue, the concert stadium had pretty good acoustics, and the music hall actually has very good acoustics, actually superior to some of the other venues its size around the world. So there were some cool things that happened in the TCC in its kind of heyday, which was like early to mid 80s, and then it kind of tapered off. I remember U2 played the TCC. Ozzy Osbourne launched a tour. I remember Motley Crue played the TCC. So it was a pretty cool like thing going on back. And I'd like us to write a new chapter in the history of the TCC. As this comes through, we're going to bring the Echo Fountains back online. We're going to take the TCC Music Hall to another level. And these are things that are going to make that campus really special. This is something that has been a long time coming for Tucson, and I'm glad we're finally making it happen.
Let's go back and reminisce a little bit about, I think it was about 10, 12 years ago, there was all that talk about tearing down the TCC, building something. I remember one of the designs kind of looked like a turtle. Remember that, Paul Cunningham?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, sure. And I wonder if have we made the right decision here with kind
it's
of the redo, you know, or what?
You know. I think everything would have could have or should have would have could have. I think, and if you live in the world of shoulda, woulda, couldas, then you never live in the world of moving forward. And so I don't want to do shoulda, woulda, couldas because they didn't happen. I wasn't even there when they spent all that money like designing them and not doing. And, you know, the big thing that we've got to remember as responsible public servants is that you put the money to work and you know, doing is usually better than spending too much money on planning. You want to plan and plan precisely, but you can overplan something. And I hearken it back to like the idea of writing a game plan when you play in a game, basketball, football, you have a game plan and you go out and you're ready for your game plan and somebody gets hurt and they were integral to the game plan. Well, now you have to write a new game plan right in the middle of the game. My favorite coach of all time, other than Lute Olson, of course, Lute Olson's my favorite coach of all time. But the other guy I love was a guy named Jim Valvano. Jim Valvano was coach of North Carolina State in the 80s. And one of the things that he was known for was if he thought the game plan was a bad move, he literally scrapped the game plan in the middle of the first half and rewrite it. And sometimes you got to do that. And that's what we had to do here. We wrote some great ideas. We did the TCC. But ultimately what we found was, you know, the TCC as it built was actually a pretty cool thing. And if we can fix it. In 1986, the University of Arizona wanted to build a new theater. And my father at the time was the vice president of the university. And he asked, what about the old theater? And what about replacing everything in the old theater and revitalizing the old theater? Well, now we have Centennial Hall. And I think that was a good move. I think that was a win. So it's all about how we write this next chapter.
Yeah, and that should have, would have, done, that still comes up all the time when you talk about Keno and placing, should we have placed the ballpark downtown? And if we had, it might have changed so many things. And again, there we go. Might have, could have, would have.
You can't dwell on shoulda, woulda, couldas. The deal is, at the end of the day, yes, lost baseball 13 years before they left. We ended up with soccer, or we ended up with pro soccer expanding. That board is stretching out its sphere of influence, and baseball, to some degree, its fan base is contracting. So it depends on who you're what you're looking at, and sometimes there's hard truth to it. I've literally told people straight up with factoid and statistics and verifiable something. They've literally told me that they just didn't believe it. So it just depends on people's perspective. But in my opinion, the best thing we can do right now with this TCC project is hope that it writes the next chapter of history on the Tucson Convention Center.
As far as, will it impact the sporting events that are there right now?
Well, I think that we want that arena to be act 200 nights, 180 nights. So, you know, when you have 10 football nights and you have 34 hockey nights, 41, I think we have 41 hockey, and then you have 12 really good concerts, one big concert a month, and then you get your monster trucks and your Disney on Ice, and you get your, you get one wrestling, and you get, so that's a convention center piece, and you add those up, and hey, 120 nights a year, that means that arena is hosting an event of over 5,000 people, set up to set an event of over between 5 and up to 12,000 people, 120 times a year. That means it's getting here. It's getting more than it. So I love that we're at that. We're on the cusp of that. We were in a situation 7 years ago where that place was vacant 21 days a month, 22 nights a month, you know, and yeah. So I think that we're definitely getting better, in a better spot. So it's how you look at those things, and I look at them purely through, like, try to be objective as possible. Is it paying off for the city? Is it helping the community? Is it keeping people in town? You know, one of the offshoots people don't realize is when we lose a concert to Phoenix, or the tour doesn't add a date to Phoenix, we have 500, 600, 700 of our citizens go up Phoenix, spend money, and we lose sales tax revenue because they're not here that week. So it's a net loss to us. So you have to keep all those things in mind, and that's why we want to have a success engine.
One further item, speaking of some of the, in the old days, the planning with Rio Nuevo was pretty heavy to the west side of the Santa Cruz River. That's why I'm glad this huge riverfront project is being talked about. It's going to be called the Batista, and it's a mixed-use facility on the Santa Cruz River. I think this could be very good news.
Look, I want to see that Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz Heritage Project, I think is one of the first pieces of this. We'll see how that recharge goes. We'll see how the water quality is there. But not only will it be a riverfront project, it'll be a riverfront project. There will actually be a river in front of it. I see the Santa Cruz. I think that water ribbon is going to expand, maybe not bank to bank, but it's going to get to 40, 50, 60 feet wide in certain places. We're going to have falls. I think that's going to occur naturally, just as much as we continue to protect our water supply and the natural replenishment of the groundwater occurs. And so that's what makes this Batista project special. And again, it is a product, that Santa Heritage project that along with Ward 1 we pushed for to make happen. And it's a template for some of the other waterways.
All right, Paul Cunningham, I'll let you get on with your luncheon at the Ray Davies Luncheon, the annual luncheon going on right now. Thank you for spending some time with us. Appreciate it very much.
Bill, thank you for having me, and have a great Halloween November.
Thank you very much. Paul Cunningham on 1030, The Voice, trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. CBS News got a 60-second update. Coming up then, David Safir from the Tucson Weekly. Lots to talk about on the education front. Coming up next.
CBS News update. Hot, dry weather combined with high winds have California at risk of wildfires, and there are a number of fires burning in the state. Cal Fire Chief Tom Porter.
Dangerous fire weather. That is exactly what we have. And we've had that all week.
A fast-moving fire forced hundreds of people to evacuate a town north of San Francisco. It's consumed about 10,000 acres. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti is there and shows how a fire can quickly become threatening.
The wind gusts here picking up at times to 76 miles per hour. We were in an area higher up on this hill where the flames ripped around the corner so fast we had to evacuate.
Good progress is reported in the battle against a fire in the San Bernardino Forest. Governor Gavin Newsom.
We have survived relatively well this year compared to previous years, but we are by no stretch of the imagination done with this season.
CBS News update, I'm Pam Coulter.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday afternoon, a lovely day. This is what we wait all year for, or at least all summer for, isn't it? Beautiful day like this. On 10:30, The Voice, trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Once a month, we are honored to have one of our two dozen or so contributors. David Safir is one of them. He is the writes about primarily education for the what's known as the RAIN, which is a range of topics from A to Z, and he writes at TucsonWeekly.com. David, how are you?
I'm well, Bill. Thank you.
I want to talk a little bit about, and I'm glad you are here, because we have not covered really at all the three school districts who have override elections coming up. And these are to ask people in their particular school district to say yes to letting them push forward with some economic needs that these districts have.
Sure, it's to supplement the budget.
Mm-hmm. There
and
you
the
go.
Three districts are Amphitheater, Sunnyside, and Flowing Wells. TUSD isn't involved, and none of the other local districts have these overrides going. Now, for people who are in any of those districts who are listening right now, I'm going to advise that you vote yes. And if you think, well, they don't need more money, you know, they waste money, I want you to think whether they need as much money as they had in 2008 when the recession hit and when there were huge budget cuts. And the answer is they don't have anywhere near that much money. And these overrides aren't making up from what's being lost. So every school district in the state right now has less money in real dollars than it had 10 or 11 years ago. The state is not making it up. So districts are trying to do it incrementally, do a little bit. So let's go through them one by one. The amphitheater is partially a new override and partially continuing one that's already there. All of these are for students and for teacher raises. In other words, none of them seem to be for equipment. None of them are for building or remodeling or maintenance. They're all going into things like all-day kindergarten in schools that don't have it, and reducing class size, tutoring, continuing to add to teacher salaries. So AMFI, the people there have two different things to vote for. One is to continue the old override, and the other is to add a new one, which is a rather small addition. Now, Sunnyside has been trying to pass an override since 2011, and it hasn't managed. manage to. So it's got 8 years of history. And Sunnyside is a low-income area. You know, everybody is struggling. I shouldn't say everyone. Many people are, and it's always more difficult to get overrides passed there. So they also want to do things like improving student career training and internship, increase teachers' professional opportunities, after-school tutoring, all kinds of things of that nature. And that's a totally new override that they're hoping will pass.
But they've said no before many times.
Yes, just like TUSD. These districts tend to say no, and it's very difficult to pass these. You have to decide whether it's worth the money that you have to put out to run them. And then Flowing Wells already has an existing override, and all they want to do is continue it on to keep doing the work they're doing.
So Flowing Wells, my friend Dr. Robert Hendricks, who again is one of our contributors, comes on once a month. He was such a great superintendent there at Flowing Wells. That's a small district, small school district, but people really believe in that district, and they notoriously pass these overrides.
You know, they pass the overrides, they outperform where they should be on the standardized tests, and they've got some kind of secret sauce going there.
What is it?
And it's, you know, unfortunately, you know, if it was McDonald's, they could just put another school or chain or, you know, franchise in another place that was exactly the same. But nobody figures out how to duplicate what's going on elsewhere. As a matter of fact, a few years back, John Petticone, who had been the superintendent in Flowing Wells, came over to TUSD, and it was in the middle of all of the Mexican-American studies kerfuffle that was going on.
So he got caught up in all of that.
But even so, it's not like he could say, okay, let's bring the Flowing Wells model. Something is going on there, and there may be that the demographics are different than what we think, or it may really that they've created a kind of a community with the district and the administrators and the teachers where everybody is working together and pulling in the same direction, and they've got, and they love the kids, and since they love the kids are inspired to work. That may be the secret sauce. Anyway, it's wonderful. So let me say one more thing, and that is the on the average house, these are going to add or continue to spend about $160, $170 a year for property tax, which is about $10 to $15 a month, which, you know, is 50 cents or less a day. Mm-hmm. It's not an exorbitant amount. You know, nobody wants to pay more property taxes, but these are really necessary, especially since every district in the state is scraping a nickel and dime together to try to give adequate education to students. You know, they can't give an abundance of it. They have no surplus to deal with. So this is very important, and I hope these pass, and I hope they pass around the state.
And TUSD went before the voters 2 years ago, was it, and asked in an override, and again, they've had several that have failed.
Yeah, they just keep failing. I don't remember if it was 2 years exactly, but it's very frustrating and you know, kind of a downer when you don't pass them, and you put so much effort in it, and you walk district, and they spend money. So they're waiting until they feel that they can get the confidence or whatever it will take to get enough voters to decide to vote for it. And right now, I mean, there's this sex education controversy going on in TUSD, but basically it's been a no news is good news year, except for that one thing. The district has been going along very smoothly.
Yeah.
The superintendent is kind of a low profile type of a guy who likes to work behind the scenes and under the radar. So there hasn't been a lot of fuss and tribulation. There haven't been specific problems that have been earmarked in any schools. So that's all to the good.
And then this announcement that was made here on the show a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Mark Stegeman announcing that he, in fact, he said on the program, I've just come from handing in my resignation to the Pima County School Superintendent. And so I think that caught a lot of people by surprise. Were you surprised?
Oh, completely. I saw it and I said, wait a minute. Okay, I got to see that in three more sources before I believe it, because I'm one of those people who does not believe what I see on the internet until it's been...
Even if it's on the Buckmaster show.
I don't know if that's where I saw it first. Okay. I think somebody else put it there. And then when I found out it was on your show, I knew it was gold.
Yeah, there you go.
This was not a...
But you were surprised.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, right now, Dustin Williams, who is the Pima County Education Superintendent, has a bunch of applications on his desk, and he has a total say on this. He gets to put in whoever he wants. But you know, Bill, I'm going to say that it would be great to have a good person there. I hope we have a good person there, but I don't think it's going to change much in terms of the dynamics, because we already have three people pretty much on the progressive side, the side that Mark Stegeman was not on usually. And Mark was a big presence on the board. Mm-hmm. And even when he was in the minority, I think he was getting frustrated from being in the minority. But even there, he could cause consternation and confusion and problems and bring up these logical, he's got a very logical mind, these logical conundrum and things like that. So without him there, no matter who comes on there, they're going to be kind of the backbencher at the time. They're going to come on in the middle of the year. They're not quite going to know what's going on. And it'll be that person and Rachel Sedgwick who will probably be holding up the minority vote. Rachel has her foot out the door too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this, it'll be interesting, but it won't be consequential unless, and I have no inside track on this at all, unless Dustin Williams decides to put on one of the people who is going to be running for school board. We're going to have two empty seats next time. That never happens.
Mm-hmm.
Two seats with nobody in it. So it's a level playing field for everyone. If Dustin Williams puts on one of the people who wants to get in the board, that's going to give that person a leg up.
Yeah, they'd have an inside track.
I have no idea.
All right. He's going to make his announcement, he says, by November 1st, which is next Friday. So that could be coming, I don't know, I'm just going to guess early next week. I mean, it could come this afternoon, but I'll just say early next week. David Safir sticks around for another segment, but first I want to tell everybody that we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things is my go-to place when I need some green things, like beautiful roses or whatever, and I go to Green Things at 3384 East River Road, but also on their 13-acre site, they're the home to Zocalo. All that great merchandise, many cases beautifully handcrafted from Mexico, Peru, Ecuador, all over Latin America. There's some European items. Come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village the next time you're over at Green Things, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, greenthingsaz.com or zocalovillage.com. Be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance insurance payers.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview. Pima County Sheriff Mark Napier will be our Friday Focus interview in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. Right now, we have David Safir, who writes about education at TucsonWeekly.com. Matthew has called us at 790-2040. Let's take Matthew's call. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Bill. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
And David, you know, obviously, I was hoping that you would comment on the Chicago strike when you get a chance, but the whole thing started me asking and thinking about our education system and all we've been through. And I went to the Wikipedia and double-checked, and Finland always coming out and as number one in the world and with a population of 5 million. And everything they do seems to reflect what even California just did, which is reduce the amount of hours at children's school. And I watched the documentary again and reviewed it with, you know, one of those Michael Moore documentaries on Finland. And it was striking to watch as they discussed the most important thing that they value is the children's happiness. Mm. And that's what they focus on. And they asked, how long do the primary children spend in school? And the answer was like, we don't keep them for more than about 4 or 5 hours. And how much homework do they get? What's homework? We don't give out homework.
Wow.
And they produce yearly, year after year, the number one result in the world.
Huh.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
What are we doing wrong?
Finland is doing something right because nobody else is quite matching that. And one thing you didn't mention, by the way, is they don't give standardized tests. And yet on the international standardized tests, their kids score at the top. And when the little kids are out for recess, they talk about them being out in winter, playing in the mud and making little streams and dams and things like that. If the teachers think it's creative enough, they say, okay, stay out for another 20 minutes. You guys are doing great work there. And it's very project-oriented.
Very flexible, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. And it's wonderful. You know, I said about flowing wells that it's kind of got a secret sauce. Well, Finland seems to do everything right. They don't formally teach reading until the kids are 7 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
At one point, they forbade teachers from teaching reading to kids who are younger than that. And now they've loosened that up. And they said, listen, if the kid is moving in that direction and wants to, help them along. But it's not. Anyway, it's wonderful. And what you were talking about, Matthew, I didn't hear that they're cutting down on the hours. I heard that they're having an earlier or a later morning start so that middle school in California can't start before 8. Mm-hmm. High schools can't start before 8:30. And where I taught in the Portland, Oregon area, we started at 7:30, and my first period class was always the sleepiest and the most polite and the least disruptive of all my classes because the kids, you know, high school kids
were ready to
wake
just kind
up
of
very
yeah,
early.
Just
and kinda, it was sometimes lovely. I didn't
they
mind.
They were
it.
Ready to chill first thing in the morning, and then they got fired up later.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing that has not been brought up about Finland are the teacher salaries, I believe, per capita are some of the highest in the world. Teachers very respected over there.
Teachers are, and I don't know how their salary compares to ours directly, but it's hard to compare because of social services. But I believe the country has far less income inequality, which would mean that teachers would be closer. But in a lot of countries, teachers and doctors aren't that far away. You know, teachers are more respected, and to some extent, doctors aren't given the same ability to get incredibly rich, the ones who aren't general practitioners anyway.
Talk a little bit about student debt. That's an issue that are the show that follows this show, the Dave Ramsey Show. They have been really hitting hard on this, on how these kids are just so burdened down after they graduate with, you know, I've been hearing stories on that show about some people have $300,000 in student loan debt.
Oh, it's phenomenal. it's awful. And, you know, you think about somebody having to buy a house and putting a down payment. Well, when they have a loan that's $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, even what you're talking about in the hundreds of thousands. Obviously, they're paying off this huge loan and can't consider becoming part of the kind of the consumer culture because so much of it is going there. Well, this morning, Bill, there was an incredible article in the Wall Street Journal about this guy, Wayne Johnson, who joined the Department of Education, Trump's Department of Education, headed by a very conservative person, Betsy DeVos, who really likes charter schools and vouchers more than she likes public schools. And this guy, Wayne Johnson, was put in charge of looking at this idea of student loans, and he actually had his own student loan company. And I just rolled my eyes and said, okay, we got another lobbyist in there, another person who's going to be supporting this and doing everything to support the industry and not the kids.
But he went the other way.
He just resigned. And when he resigned, I mean, he didn't resign under a cloud so far as I know, but when he resigned, he said, you know, having lived with this, looked at this in the Department of Education, my belief is that we have to forgive the first $50,000 of debt of every kid out there, every student who's out there, wipe out $50,000 in debt. He says a lot of these debts will never be paid, and the other ones, they're hurting the kids. So, and then he went further. He said, you know, all those people have already paid their student debts are going to see that and say, well, why should they get it and not me?
Right.
He says, fine, we'll give up to a $50,000 tax credit to anyone who's already paid it off. And then he goes to the third step, and I have to tell you again, this is a moderate Republican. This is not a Democrat. This is not Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
Actually, his plan is a little bit wider reaching than hers is. He says that we should actually give people who are new students in college $50,000 government vouchers for their college costs. And he's doing this not from the standpoint of being some wild-eyed liberal or somebody who believes in social programs and, you know, helping people out. It's just that he saw it and said, this is awful. This is awful for the students, and it's awful for our society, and he wants to fix it. I was so
how refreshing,
buoyed by that.
Especially somebody that is associated with the industry.
Right. And so he knows it from the inside.
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
says, this is not working. And so I, you know, give this guy all the credit in the world. I hope he goes on all kinds of talk shows and writes op-eds and things like that, because something from him carries more weight, in a sense, than something from, say, Elizabeth Warren, who recently put out her education plan. And her education plan, like everything with Elizabeth, I have a plan for that, Warren, is very, very detailed, and it shows something.
She's a real policy wonk.
Oh, she is. She is. She really is. Wonky is right.
Yeah.
And you find out that she was doing this back in the 90s, too.
Yeah.
This is not something new. She's always been passionate about this. We have in the White House now Trump and very, very conservative policies on education. As a matter of fact, the Department of Education is being sued for what it's doing on some of these student loans right now. But people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and really Democrats around the country are taking a step not just beyond Trump, but beyond President Obama, who was rather in the charter schools or the answer kind of an area, an arena. It was one of the few things that I really disagreed with Obama on. But here's some of the things she said. She just put out her I Have a Plan for That plan. Title I aid, which goes to schools that have a lot of students who are in the lower income, she wants to quadruple that, make it four times as much. She wants to cut funds for charter school expansion from the federal government. That doesn't mean she wants to wipe out charters, but she doesn't want the federal government to be giving more money to charters for startups, because a lot of this money is wasted. Hmm. She wants to ban for-profit charters. There aren't many charters that are actually for-profit, even in Arizona where it's legal, but she also wants to ban outsourcing their operations to for-profit companies, which is what a lot of people do. A nonprofit school will then send 80% of its money up to a charter management organization who will run things, and that's for profit.
Is that done in Arizona quite a bit?
Basis has that situation.
Okay.
Lots of places. Any number of them farm out their work.
Yeah.
There are some that are genuinely for profit, but most aren't. And you look at it, it's very interesting. I go on people's...
Going to have to wrap it up here real quickly, David.
Okay.
Do you want to give us one more?
Oh, yeah. The other thing is she's really for integrating the schools, and she has one of the best ways of integrating the schools is reversing neighborhood segregation, because if the neighborhoods are segregated, it's very hard to get a wide variety of kids in the schools.
All right.
I love what she's doing. She's not going to get most of it through, but it's great stuff.
David Seff here. We'll look for your work at TucsonWeekly.com in the range. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening, and we will be back with you with Sheriff Mark Napier at 12:04 with our Friday Focus interview tomorrow.